It's Wednesday, September 16th, 2009, and it's got to be 420 somewhere in the world. I'm your host, Radical Russ Belville. Produced and distributed by the National Organization for the Reform of Marijuana Laws in Washington, D.C., this is your normal daily audio stash, the growing truth about cannabis. Welcome to the most popular podcast regarding marijuana in all of America and all the world, featuring interviews with scientists, politicians, doctors, prohibition policy activists, regular cannabis consumers, musicians, and Normal's staff and Normal's board of directors, along with music and comedy no other podcast can offer. You can always find out more about our show at our website, stash.normal.org. And continue the education and conversation on our blog as well. We're ending marijuana prohibition with education, one listener at a time. The podcasting and blogging technology for the Normal Daily Audio Stash is provided by Red Aphid Interactive Media. For your professional web design needs, visit redaphid.com. Good day, Stashers, and welcome to the podcast. Apologize for being off the net for the past couple of days, Monday and Tuesday. Still recovering from the Portland hemp stock and the tragic news that we had to go through with the heart attack of Jack Herer, the emperor of hemp. We've got some updates here for you. Jack is still in the hospital, still in the induced coma, but the doctors are slowly raising his blood temperature. They've been keeping him cool to help the healing process. And they will know soon whether they can do any brain scans to find out if there was any brain damage. But Jack has stabilized, and it looks like he's going to pull through this. All of our thoughts and prayers here at Normal go out to Jeannie, his wife, and the rest of his family, and to all the people who know and love Jack Herer and have been so influenced by his work. Get well soon, Jack. Also, my big road trip is coming up. I'm flying out of here on Friday to head to Boston for the Freedom Rally, so there will be no podcast on Friday. I'll be broadcasting Normal Show live from Boston with all sorts of special guests from the Freedom Rally. That'll be Saturday night at 6 p.m. Pacific Time, 9 p.m. Eastern Time. From Boston on Sunday, I will fly to Washington, D.C., where I'll get a chance to meet up with my good friend Stevie Lee Webb, who is a friend I've actually never met in person before. He was the engineer and co-host of the Russ Belville Show, my political talk radio show on XM Satellite. He worked the board in Washington, D.C., while I was doing the hosting from Portland, Oregon. So we've only chatted through the phone lines and through the radio show and seen pictures of each other on the net, but haven't actually met in person, so this will be a lot of fun. From Washington, I'm going to be spending 3 days there with the Normal staff, helping them to get ready for the Normal National Conference, and then on Wednesday night, flying out to San Francisco for the conference, which will take place the 24th, 25th, and 26th. From San Francisco, I then fly to Madison, Wisconsin, to take part in the Great Midwest Harvest Fest, my first time doing that event, which also gives me the chance to make my pilgrimage to Green Bay, Wisconsin, and visit Lambeau Field. Of course, I am the au gratin cheesehead, the world's greatest Packers fan born in Idaho. Potatoes and cheese, get it? And then from Madison, Wisconsin, I'll be flying to Orlando, Florida to give a speech at the University of Central Florida, one of the strongest college Normal chapters in the country. Hope to meet a lot of you while we're out on the road. If you'd like to hook up, send me an email at stash@normal.org or give me a call at 888-7-RADICAL.
Twice a day, but I don't care. It's 420 somewhere.
Taking a look at our Normal calendar of events, we start on the East Coast on Thursday. Philly Normal will be having their open meeting at 4722 Baltimore Avenue in Philadelphia at the A Space. They always meet on the first and third Thursdays of each month at 7:30 p.m. Eastern. Check the normal.org calendar for more details or visit phillynormal.org. Also, there'll be sign holding sponsored by Nebraska Normal at 17th and Dodge Streets in Omaha, Nebraska to raise awareness for marijuana legalization. Then on Friday, they move the sign holding to 16th and O Streets in Lincoln, Nebraska in front of the federal building. Check out NebraskaNormal.org for details. Also on Friday, the Cannabis Common Sense television show goes on the air, 8 p.m. Pacific Time, 11 p.m. Eastern, which you can stream live at ustream.tv. That's the letter U, stream.tv. And of course, Saturday, the Boston Freedom Rally takes place at the Boston Common. This will be the 20th annual celebration. I'll be there bringing you all sorts of live updates from the event and producing Normal Show live from the event. But also happening on Saturday, Tennessee Normal is having their end of summer get together at Cedar Hill Park. This will be a family and pet friendly event, a picnic, hacky sack, and frisbee. Lots of fun for everybody involved in Madison, Tennessee, from Tennessee Normal. Check out tnnorml.org for more details. Also, two Normal chapters are getting involved in sign holding for Mark Emery, the Prince of Pot from Canada, who was extradited to the United States to face prison for selling marijuana seeds. Normal of Waco, Inc. will be at the parking lot at the corner of 8th Street and Franklin in Waco, Texas. And Mile High Normal will be at Skyline Park at 16th Street and Arapahoe in Denver, Colorado, standing up against the DEA's persecution of Mark Emery. Check out normal.org/calendar for more details and a map of how to get to these rallies. It's a Normal shout-out. Our shout-outs today go out to the activists in the Middle Atlantic states who'd like to get involved with Normal. Specifically, I'm talking about the District of Columbia, Northern Virginia, Maryland, and Delaware. I will be spending September 20th, 21st, and 22nd in Washington, D.C., and would love the opportunity to meet some of you and help you organize those evenings when we can get together for pizza and a beer or something. So give me a call at 888-7-RADICAL or send me an email at stash@normal.org, and we'll hook up somehow. Now, coming up on today's Daily Audio Stash, we begin with your hemp headlines, including my review of the news of the heart attack of the Emperor of Hemp, Jack Herer, at the Portland Hemp Stock this last weekend. We look at the FBI Uniform Crime Report for 2008 that shows nationwide marijuana arrests are down, and another raid, this time at the Berkeley Patients Group by the Marin County Sheriffs, and how a Normal board member helped to defend them. Today is our Dose of Cannabis Science with Dr. Mitch Earlywine. We're going to be talking to him about Jack Herer's condition and a look at marijuana public service announcements and studies that show how they may be detrimental to causing teenagers to want to use more marijuana. And instead of our daily Toker Tunes brought to you by MarijuanaMusicAwards.com, I'm going to be giving you a collage of audio that I collected from the Portland Hemp Stock backstage and around the event, live as it happened. All that and more coming up on your Normal Daily Audio Stash.
Hello, I'm Paul Stanford from the Hemp and Cannabis Foundation, or THCF. Medical marijuana is legal in 13 states today, and THCF has clinics in 8 of those states. Our doctors help qualified patients obtain an authorization for medical marijuana in their state. Patients are eligible for medical marijuana with a history of either severe chronic pain and or nausea, cancer, AIDS or HIV, hepatitis, glaucoma, seizure disorders like epilepsy, chronic muscle spasms such as in multiple sclerosis or asthma, neurodegenerative diseases such as Alzheimer's, and gastrointestinal disorders like IBS or Crohn's disease. If you or someone you know has one of these conditions, our doctors will help you obtain a permit for medical marijuana. THCF Medical Clinics has offices in Washington State, Oregon, California, Colorado, Hawaii, Nevada, Montana, and now Michigan. Call 1-800-723-0188 or go to the web at hemp.org or 1-800-723-0188.
Now it's time to take a look at the latest stories about marijuana from news organizations across America and around the world in our Normal Daily Audio Stash, Hemp Headlines. The Emperor of Hemp, Jack Herer, suffers heart attack backstage at Portland Hemp Stock. The author of the seminal marijuana legalization tome, The Emperor Wears No Clothes, Jack Herer, collapsed backstage at the 5th annual Portland Hempstock shortly after delivering a fiery speech on the main stage. Normal's Madeline Martinez followed Jack in the speaking lineup and noted his apparent weakness, telling him he should find some shade from the high temperatures that were close to records in this usually cool Pacific Northwest climate. A Hempstock security volunteer named Matt and a hired park security officer were first on the scene to attend to Jack, performing CPR and trying to keep him comfortable as paramedics arrived at Kelly Point Park. Hempstock musicians and speakers gathered backstage, including activists and friends who have known and worked with Jack for many years. They stood in shock as medical personnel fought to keep Jack alive using breathing tubes, IV drugs, and the defibrillator. The decisive action by Hempstock staff in responding to the emergency and subsequent clearing the paths for the ambulance certainly made a huge impact on Jack's fight for life. Madeline commented, quote, "Matt is my hero today. He was just phenomenal. He knew exactly what to do and immediately started CPR. He probably saved his life," end quote. Jack had suffered a stroke a few years back at another hemp rally in Oregon, coincidentally while posing for photographs with Madeline and others. Ironically, at the Cannabis Common Sense show the night prior, Jack was discussing the stroke and his recovery since. Paul Stanford had noted how much Jack's speech has been improving even since the prior year at Hempstock, to which Jack replied, quote, "I'm feeling better than I have in 10 years," end quote. Initial reports of the incident occurred as I was preparing Normal Show Live. I could see the entrance of the ambulance from my vantage point at the Hemposium, but was unaware that it arrived for one of my heroes. Cannabis Kerry ventured out to recruit live guests at 6:20 p.m., and that was when we first got word of the attack, with the only news at that point being, Jack Herer has collapsed, people performed CPR, paramedics said he has a pulse, as he was taken from backstage. As the evening rolled on, we spoke with one of the staff at Jack's booth, situated next to Oregon Normals and just two booths away from the Hemposium. She told us that Jack's son was with him at Emmanuel Hospital and that he had suffered a heart attack due to arterial blockage. A decidedly somber tone had fallen over the entire Hempstock proceedings, with onstage speakers telling the crowd about the situation and calling for best wishes and prayers for Jack, his wife, and his family. Nationwide marijuana arrests down for first time since 2002, but still second highest arrest total ever. The FBI Uniform Crime Report for 2008 has been released this week, and the numbers provide us with a few good news, bad news scenarios to report. Good news. Marijuana arrests declined from the previous year. For the first time since 2002, and only the fifth time since 1990, there were fewer marijuana arrests in America than the previous year. Last year, there were 872,721 arrests for marijuana. This year, the figure has dropped to 847,864, a decline of 2.85%. Bad news? There were 847,864 arrests for marijuana last year, the second highest total of marijuana arrests ever recorded. This is 2.5 times more arrests for pot than in 1990. There were more pot arrests than people living in South Dakota. Good news. This year, arrests for drug abuse violations declined overall from 1.84 million in 2007 to 1.7 million in 2008. The proportion of drug arrests to all arrests also dropped from 13% of all arrests in 2007 to 12.2% of all arrests in 2008. The bad news, the number of marijuana arrests as a proportion of all those drug abuse violation arrests increased from 47% to 49.8%. Half of all drug arrests are for selling, manufacturing, or possessing marijuana. In the Midwest and South, over half of all drug abuse violation arrests were just for possession of marijuana. Good news. Police seem to be doing a better job on violent crime. In 2008, there were only 2,500 fewer arrests for homicide, rape, robbery, and assault than in 2007. There were fewer incidents of violent crime in 2008, 1.22 million in 2007, 1.2 million in 2008, and better clearance of violent crimes, 44.5% of which led to arrest in 2007, 45.1% led to arrest in 2008. The bad news? 89% of all the marijuana arrests were for possession only, meaning there were 754,224 arrests for personal use of marijuana, not selling or cultivating. The arrests for sales or cultivation of marijuana that make up the 11% of all marijuana arrests include those who were growing for their own personal use and medical marijuana grows. By comparison, there were only 594,911 arrests for the 1.2 million violent crimes committed in America. Good news? While the number of adults who admit using marijuana in the past year increased by 500,000, from 22 million in 2007 to 22.5 million in 2008, the number of arrests for marijuana declined by almost 25,000. This means there are now 37.46 arrests per 1,000 annual tokers in 2008 versus 39.67 in 2007. This works out to one marijuana arrest every 37 seconds in 2008 rather than every 36 seconds in 2007. The bad news? The percentage of people under age 18 arrested for drug abuse violations remains unchanged at 10.6% of all drug arrests. Police seek grower sales records from Berkeley Patients Group, get nothing. From the Contra Costa Times. Sheriff's deputies from Marin County attempted to confiscate records of pot sales from growers to medical marijuana dispensaries in Berkeley and Oakland on Tuesday, but came up empty-handed, a lawyer for the dispensaries said. After leaving the East Bay, the eight investigators planned to execute a search warrant for digital records at a third dispensary in San Francisco called the Divinity Tree, said William Panzer, an attorney for all three dispensaries. Bill Panzer is also a member of the Normal Board of Directors and the Normal Legal Committee. He will be leading the Thursday Medical Cannabis Day at the upcoming Normal National Conference in San Francisco on September 24th. If you want to know anything about the legality and operation of medical marijuana dispensaries and collectives in California and elsewhere, this is the seminar you don't want to miss. Bill's also known for his guitar playing and has invited me to jam with him on my bass that weekend. Talent abounds in this community. Brad Senesak, a spokesman for the Berkeley Patients Group on San Pablo Avenue, said officials there told the deputies they don't keep those records. Quote, "They never entered the building," Senesak said. "They shook our hands and left," end quote. Panzer said the same thing happened minutes later at Harborside Health Center near Jack London Square. The warrant seeks sales information from six alleged pot growers to the dispensaries. Panzer said state and local prosecutors are now going after suppliers of medical marijuana dispensaries since it is illegal to sell to them, even though it is legal to buy marijuana with a prescription. This is in the wake of the Obama administration's remarks that it would back off on DEA raids at some dispensaries in the state. Senesak said the deputies probably knew they would come up empty-handed. Quote, "Most dispensaries don't keep records like that," Senesak said. "It's all in the brain. You know who your growers are." End quote.
There is a peaceful solution called a peace revolution. And now let's take back America.
This is Willie Nelson. Like millions of freedom-loving Americans, I'm a marijuana smoker, and I don't think that should be any of the government's business. There's absolutely nothing wrong with the responsible use of marijuana. Next time you light up, take the time to let your elected officials know how you feel. It's time we legalize marijuana and stop treating marijuana smokers like criminals. For more information on how you can help legalize marijuana, please contact Normal at NORML.org.
NormalCon 2009, Yes We Cannabis, September 24th through 26th, 2009, in San Francisco, California.
The war on drugs has been an utter failure, and I think that we need to rethink and decriminalize our marijuana laws.
President Obama was right in 2004, and 5 years later, the American people agree.
As regards to legalization, it's not in the president's vocabulary, and it's not in mine.
We're working hard to make sure legalization is in the drug czar's vocabulary.
Whether legalizing marijuana would improve the economy. The answer is no. I don't think that is a good strategy.
There's nothing funny about legalization, Mr. President. Registration, sponsorships, and vending information is available at norml.org or by calling 888-67-NORMAL. Who is telling you the truth about marijuana? The government? Scientists? Doctors? Which claims are scientifically valid, and which claims
are reefer madness?
Every Wednesday, we separate the stems of propaganda from the buds of truth with Normal's look at
cannabis science.
Well, we're back in the office, and it's time for our weekly dose of cannabis science with Dr. Mitch Earlywine. Welcome back to the show, sir.
Glad to be here.
Of course, this weekend I was involved with the Portland Hemp Stock out here at Kelly Point Park, and by now everyone's heard the tragic news that Jack Herer, the Emperor of Hemp, a well-known activist and beloved member of our community, suffered a heart attack after delivering a speech at the Hemp Stock. It was quite warm. It was quite a warm day for Portland standards. It got near 90, or I think in the 90s, actually, as far as the temperature went. And after Jack gave his speech, he looked a little weak, and Madeline Martinez saw him leaving the stage. She was up next and told Jack he needed to get some shade and some water. And the next thing we knew, there was an ambulance showing up and people gathered around him giving CPR and all. So Jack's had a couple strokes in the past as well. And I just thought I would ask you, sir, if you know, the marijuana smoking, you know, Jack, of course, is a big proponent of marijuana and says that using it regularly will add years to your life and so on. Is there anything with regard to the chronic use of marijuana that would exacerbate a problem like this with a heart or with strokes or anything like that?
Thanks for asking, Russ, because I knew this would come up. And I mean, Jack's just a wonderful guy. I've got some hemp underwear that he made. I mean, he's just a superb advocate of all of this. The idea that cannabis contributed to his conditions, however, is really unlikely. There is one published case study of somebody having a heart attack relatively soon after smoking marijuana, and we do know that marijuana does tend to raise heart rate itself over, you know, an acute way and right after smoking. But it doesn't, you know, send it up to skyrocketing, beats per minute. And it's extremely unlikely that this was, the case in Jack's condition because, you know, the guy's got tolerance like, let's be honest, nobody else we know. So I really wish him and his family all the best. They're wonderful people. He's been through tough times before, and really my, you know, hopes and prayers are really with him.
Yeah, the last report we've heard is that he's in the hospital. He's in a medically induced coma, and they're using ice to help keep his body temperature down. What exactly does that mean, a medically induced coma?
The bottom line is there's certain substances, say insulin, that you could put in the body at a high dose so that you'll essentially go into a relatively deep sleep. But it's not like an anesthetic or something like that that would really impair your brain long term. And this is just given his opportunity for, you know, the body to kind of rest up here in a way that it couldn't normally. It's likely that it'll keep, you know, them to get his temperature down and give him a chance to really recover as best as possible. It doesn't always, you know, bode well. I wish he were just in an oxygen tent or something simple like that. But this doesn't mean that this is the end at all. And the fact that they're, you know, willing to use this kind of procedure is actually a good sign that he's getting great care.
Yeah. And they also did say that his heart seemed to be doing okay at this point. So, again, all our best wishes to Jeannie and his whole family. We hope Jack does well. To switch gears just a little bit, to talk about our regular topic that we were going to cover on today's show, there was a study that just came out, and you and I take a look at all these public service announcements that come out, you know, with the kids going through the drive-thru that run over the little girl, or the kids in the office that shoot each other because they were smoking pot. And I understand there's a new study that came out regarding these public service announcements and their effectiveness. And I was wondering if you could tell our listeners a little bit about it.
Absolutely. So about a year ago, you and I discussed how basically these public service announcements about marijuana were just not helping at all as far as adolescent marijuana use and attitudes is concerned. And I want to emphasize that, in all honesty, public service announcements don't have a giant effect on anybody's behavior in any domain. if you really need a flu shot and a public service announcement tells you where to get it, that can be really helpful. But nobody ever saw something on TV and said, hey, gee, now I'm going to exercise, eat right, and wear a condom. It just doesn't have that much impact on people's behavior. So we don't want to expect too much from these. But unfortunately, this reanalysis of these data suggests that the folks who we'd want to reach most, in this case, adolescents who are at high risk for trying marijuana early in life, are actually having the worst reactions to these ads, particularly the ads that show somebody using marijuana or show smoke or somehow suggest use in the interactions among the characters in the ad. So there's kind of this boomerang effect with these marijuana scenes where suddenly the high-risk adolescents really dislike these ads the most, and sort of the content of their thoughts is, oh, this is completely bogus. I don't trust any of this. I'm never going to listen to these guys.
Mm. Is it that the display of marijuana use in the ads runs counter to their own personal experience?
They didn't get to those data. And a lot of these high-risk folks aren't necessarily users themselves so much as folks who have friends who are users, folks who've been offered cannabis in the past, and folks who are sensation seekers, the guys who like to ride that front car on the roller coaster, that kind of thing. And so what they tend to, do in response to these is just say, I don't follow this, I don't believe it, or I really don't like it. I think we could benefit from hearing what they have to say as far as the depictions. Some of them are pretty unrealistic, and I could certainly understand these folks saying these and saying, wow, whoever made this ad doesn't know what they're talking about, especially with cannabis, and I'm certainly not going to listen to any of the arguments. One of the caveats was that even with the most sensible, high-impact arguments, a bad depiction of the way marijuana was used completely wiped out any strength of any argument like that.
Hmm. Were there any ads aimed toward adolescents that proved to be effective at all?
Unfortunately, none of these are real slam-dunk great messages, and I feel like this is an area worth investigating simply because, as we've mentioned before, and it's present on the normal website, heavy use early in life just isn't a good thing. It does seem to increase likelihood of sort of dependent symptoms. Freed has those data that suggest some modest decreases in IQ. There's one study that suggests some deviant brain development, but another one hasn't replicated it. So it's not a slam dunk, oh, this is going to make you explode. It's not methamphetamine,
right?
But it is not, a great habit, and it's certainly something we don't want to support. I feel like the key is, laying these studies out with real candor. Of course, that's what I, hyped in the Parents Guide to Marijuana. But more importantly, increasing all your other nice leisure behaviors, having some skill-based stuff like sports and music, art, literature, anything that's a good time to you, and go out and spend a lot of time on that and save the cannabis for later on.
Hmm. Let's say the drugs aren't, sends you an email, calls you on the phone, has a couple tens of millions of dollars to throw at some ads. What would you put together for an ad to get adolescents to think seriously about not using cannabis until they're older?
What I'm finding is just the idea of don't use until you're older seems relatively appealing compared to these don't do it ever kinds of things. Anybody can promise to not do something for a day or a week, mm-hmm. But nobody can say, I promise I'll never do this ever in my life. It's just too much. And so I feel like that alone would be a step in the right direction. We've seen really nice luck with the tobacco literature because the damage caused by smoked tobacco is very genuine. And we can show them the data and say, look, this is what's going to happen, and it happens all the time, and it's really bad. Oddly enough, with cannabis, the data aren't all that compelling. We don't have the cannabis-induced lung cancer. We don't have the cannabis-induced emphysema. We don't see these elevated rates in all the other cancers that we see with tobacco. And so, in a sense, I can understand why they would think, hey, maybe this isn't so bad. My concern about the ads as they're currently presented, particularly the ones with these sort of snide implications that this is going to make you crazy or this is going to turn you into a heroin addict, is that it really hurts our credibility when we talk about other drugs. So methamphetamine, which is extremely dangerous, long-term use can shrink the brain, the probability of dependence is really high. It's just a nasty drug. But if you're the guy who just last week said marijuana will make you psychotic, why would any teen believe you when you said methamphetamine is bad?
Mm-hmm. Now, getting away a little bit from the, you know, physical or mental issues with regard to cannabis use in adolescence, is there anything showing any sort of sociological or social developmental problems? Like, I mean, I guess I'm referring to some of these ads that would point out that you're not going to have any friends, you're going to be isolated, you're going to be get depressed or moody. Anything with regard to kids, their emotional development or being able to integrate into society with heavy cannabis use in adolescence?
It's curious because, of course, the adolescents who choose to use heavily early in life also have a number of other social problems to deal with. So occasionally we'll get a result like they're underemployed or they're less educated than you'd expect given their IQ, or they're more likely to marry later, which is actually something that I think is a good thing, or they're more likely to divorce or have multiple marriages and things like that. And the problem is all these are things that are often a correlate of, you know, coming from a less wealthy family, living in an area that's, you know, not necessarily as wealthy as other areas. And so it's impossible to say it's the cannabis or is it a lot of these other sort of demographic factors. Nevertheless, I feel like if you spend all your waking moments stoned, well, of course you're not going to be able to learn how to process emotions, you know, form interesting relationships with potential partners and all that kind of stuff. But in all honesty, what teen is really doing that? And I feel like that's the thing we want to prevent is inadvertent, you know, development of dependent symptoms where folks are getting high every day, even if they feel like they don't want to. And that's just, you know, not the kind of life anybody wants to have.
When researchers are looking at this stuff and trying to tease out the data with regard to kids watching these PSAs, how do they deal with the outside factors like events that are happening in the news? You know, Michael Phelps is caught smoking a bong. How do you tease out the kids seeing that happen and saying, oh, well, Michael Phelps did it, it's no big deal for me, versus all the ads they're seeing? How do the real world things tease out from the studying of the ads?
Well, I mean, in the Michael Phelps incident, I mean, I told my kids as soon as they win 12 gold medals, they can smoke all the pot they want. but again, you know, this is part of our culture now. The medical cannabis news is rampant. There's something about marijuana in the newspaper, on the radio, on the TV, at least every week, if not every day. And that's the opportunity for parents to have these conversations. And it kind of lets you know that these PSAs may not be the most efficient way to get at this, because in truth, a 30-second commercial cannot compete with all these other sources of information. And it brings me back to that, you know, emphasizing nice relationships with adults, good skill-based leisure, an attachment to something intellectual, something fun, some kind of skill that you have. And then suddenly, cannabis can, as you grow up, become an interesting part of a multifaceted life instead of the one thing you know how to do and you don't know how to do anything else.
Understood. Well, it's something that we're always paying attention to here at Normal because, of course, our principles of responsible use say that, you know, we want to wait kids till they're, you know, folks till they're 18 to make these kind of decisions. And you and I have talked about this before about setting an age limit. And it seems that around age 18 is about the time when the brain seems to be developed enough. Anything else with regards to adolescence and use that we want to end up on today?
Well, it's curious because the later you wait, the better it seems to turn out as far as some of the dependent symptoms are concerned. And that's the truth with alcohol, too. I mean, the latest data suggests it'd be better if we didn't drink alcohol till about age 24. But you can't, you know, I can't imagine a law like that passing anytime soon. But, you know, just spreading the word that taking good care of yourself, that you only have one body and it's got to last a lifetime. It doesn't seem that way in your 20s, but, you know, as you and I know, when you get over 40, suddenly the message becomes loud and clear.
Oh, yes. If only we had a time machine to go back a couple decades and talk to Radical Russ in 1989. Well, Dr. Mitch Earlywine from State University of New York at Albany, thanks so much for joining us every week. We really appreciate it. And we'll see you at the Normal Conference. Is that correct?
Looking forward to it.
All right. We'll see you in San Francisco, and have yourself a great day.
You too. Take care.
There were 765,000 marijuana arrests in 2007. That's not for dealers and kingpins. No, that's just for simple possession. Multiply that by the average cost of each arrest, and what have you got? $7.6 billion spent on people just smoking some pot. That's enough money to buy health insurance for every child that needs it. That's enough cash to adopt every stray dog and enough left over to feed it. Mr. Obama, I kinda wrote this song for you. You got my vote for change. Now let's see what you can do.
The most devastating effect of the war on marijuana is that it is a war on everyday people like you and me. All week we speak to the doctors, scientists, celebrities, and politicians who make up the professionals fighting for cannabis liberty, but we never forget about the tens of millions who use cannabis, the millions who need medical access to cannabis, the hundreds of thousands arrested every year for cannabis, and tens of thousands imprisoned under our marijuana laws. At Normal, we are the Cannabis Consumers Lobby, and we take this opportunity to share the experiences of our cannabis community.
This last weekend was the Portland Hemp Stock at Kelly Point Park in Portland, Oregon, the fifth annual such event, and in my jobs with the Normal Stash and Normal Show Live and just working with Normal, I got many opportunities to speak on stage, present at the Hemposium, and just generally enjoy in front of the stage and behind the stage the different events that were going on. I took a lot of live twit pics and cinch recordings, and you can find them on the sidebar at stash.normal.org. And if you'd like to see the pictures that go with these stories, they're up at twitpic.com/photos/radicalruss. These recordings are just some of the moments that I managed to capture while I was running around on Saturday and Sunday. We begin with me going backstage before the events begin.
Radical Russ here backstage at the Portland Hemp Stock at the beautiful Kelly Point Park. We're at the confluence of the Willamette and the Columbia Rivers. We're hanging backstage with the media crew here. You can hear them all talking. Hey, media crew, say hi to everybody in cyberspace.
Hi, everyone. Hey, welcome to the fest.
Party's about to start. We'll have more updates. Check the web every hour or so. We'll have a bunch of stuff. Talk to you later and take care of each other, tokers.
One of my favorite things about the summer festival season, both Seattle Hemp Fest and Portland Hemp Stock, give me the opportunity to stretch my musical chops a little bit. As many people know, I used to be a professional musician back in my home state of Idaho. Since moving to Oregon, I've delved headfirst into marijuana law reform, so I haven't been in any bands or done any public performances aside from these hemp fests. So myself and my cousin Kenny, along with John Cornette, joined Tim Pate on stage to open Seattle Hemp Fest this year and to open the Portland Hemp Stock. After performing on stage, we appeared backstage at the media table for this interview.
John Cornette, they're all in my band, they're all my friends. They call us Tim Payton friends, but really it's Tim Payton and his superiors. But anyway, this is the 18th millionth time we've played. We're really tired. We want to go home.
No, we don't.
Nobody will let us. I'm saying.
Oh, okay.
I'm saying. Never mind. Take that away. Did you want to say something before I end this?
I think you're doing a fine job.
Do you have anything to say before we turn the TV off?
Sure.
Water, okay, right there. Okay, pass the microphone. I want the microphone back. Come on. Pass. No, not the. Right. Yes, it is. Kenny, you got anything to say?
Not really.
Okay, you lose your chance. Oh, you're not even
going. I'm going.
He's never without a word.
Hey, everybody come out to Hempstock. If you're not here this time, you should be here next time.
That's right.
This is the closing fest of the Pacific Northwest Hemp Fest season, and in my opinion, the one of the best.
There you go, one of the best.
I was going to say the best is Seattle, awesome.
Excuse me, I need to use the mic. Seattle's really cool.
Yeah.
One thing to say, here, oh, sure, here, take the mic.
My name is John Cornette, friend Tim, Bobby. My best friend in the whole world, Randy Kohler, hung himself in Texas Hill in 1977. He had one half of marijuana cigarette. He was facing life with, and hung himself in jail. Still, he said, I'm here to dedicate.
That's right. Good. All right. Right. Amen.
Amen.
Anything else? We're oh, yes, Kenny, please.
Yeah. I am living proof that the stigma about marijuana lowering your ability to have babies, so not true.
So not true.
I've been a stoner since the age of 11, and I have two beautiful girls that were pretty well conceived while intoxicated. So that one's debunked.
That one's debunked. Thank you for that information.
And I'm not his illegitimate son.
Thank you, Dad.
And Guy O'Belam came up from California. He's the publisher of West Coast Cannabis Magazine, but more widely known as one of the best 420-friendly comedians out there. He kept the crowd laughing the whole day as he introduced the acts from the main stage at Portland Hempstock.
In line, you can deep fry a stick of butter. I'd be first in line. Okay, I'm the only one. This is Portland. You guys are all. I'm a vegan, bro. I'm from San Francisco. Cats are crazy with that shit. They're not even vegan. It's now it's like raw. I only eat raw foods. I don't cook my food. I just eat raw food. I don't even shit. I just squat over my worm box and cook compost. No? No one's got a worm box here in Portland? You don't have your urban garden out of Sellwood or whatnot? Sellwood sounds like what a male prostitute does. Anyway.
The dick joke.
You get like dirty jokes, apparently.
Why didn't you say so? There's kids here, though. We have to be circumspect. Don't let your kids find your sex toys. That's always awkward. Quit chasing your sister with that. It's not a lightsaber.
I know. It glows. It goes...
Normal's executive director, Alan St. Pierre, flew from Washington, D.C. to Portland to both participate in the Oregon Criminal Defense Lawyers Association's seminar, All Things Cannabis, that they began on Thursday, and to present at the Portland Hempstock. This is Alan on stage Saturday afternoon.
I've gone to about 200 of these events since 1991. I have to say, this is one of the wildest venues I've ever been to.
Yeah.
I mean, just getting here was an odyssey, was it not? Taxi cab driver,
like, where?
The biggest fairies ever. I gave him a tip. Guess what I gave him? Yes.
Ah!
I can't tell you. This state was the first state to decriminalize marijuana. The state of Oregon was even ahead of California in changing the laws. So it's no surprise to me that this state continues to be at the vanguard of reform. Hi, doctor. Hi, Lebeck. And one of the reasons why the state's policies are as functional as they are is because people like Dr. Lebeck, for the better part of 20 years, have been helping citizens connect with doctors to get the medicines they need. Thank you. One of my heroes for sure. This state has over, I believe, 25,000 registered patients at this point. California doesn't have 25,000 registered patients. You can go to some places like Vermont and there's like 250 registered patients. There's 250 registered patients right here in front of me, more or less. This state has a functional medical marijuana program. Is it perfect? By no means. And there are certain parts of the state, you can be a serious victim of geography. Yeah, here in the greater Portland area, maybe in Salem and Eugene proper, you don't get harangued that much. But go dead east?
Oh, yeah.
Same thing with California, by the way. You know, the coastal communities, they basically have medical marijuana, retail access. But the more easterly you go in a place like California or Washington State, the harsher the laws get. So here we are in a great part of the state to be making this argument. I also want to recognize that we couldn't be here without activists being involved for 20 or 30 years. Paul Stanford,
who heads up THC Foundation, has been working for 25 years to reform laws at so many different levels, whether it's been hemp or medical marijuana or regulating the legalization of cannabis for adult use, Oregon Normal, Voter Power, and all the other groups that predated them in the 1970s and 80s. In the 1980s, one of the first votes for medical marijuana, one of the first legalization votes ever happened, Oregon Marijuana Initiative. And that legacy still lives on today.
One of my favorite things about this year's Portland Hemp Stock is that my brother, Josh Belville, who just moved into town a year ago, landed himself a spot on the stage playing acoustic guitar and singing. This is Ngayo with the introduction and a little bit of my brother playing at Portland Hemp Stock. Unfortunately, the audio is not so great, so I won't play you an entire song, but you can get an idea what a good singer he is from what little I'm going to play.
We got a band coming up. Who's coming up next? Josh Melville? Josh Belville's coming up.
My brother.
That's Russ Belville's. Oh, that's Radical Russ from the Normal Stash Podcast, everybody.
You're all on Twitter.
You're all on Twitter. So, you know, I hope you told your mom where you were going. Because your mom's updating her Twitter account. Hey, that's Johnny. He said he was going to be at the library.
I'm a singer-songwriter. I'm originally from Idaho, and I moved here a year ago, and this song is, I wrote it right before I moved here, and it's called Going to Portland. Thank you for having me.
Eastern Oregon is just a big desert. I am driving
In addition to the speakers on the main stage, the Portland Hemp Stock featured the Hemposium stage, a panel beneath a large tent with lots of chairs for people to catch some shade and be able to participate in an intimate question and answer session with the panelists. I appeared on a panel called Cannabis and Activism and the Media, and this panel also featured Normal's executive director, Alan St. Pierre, and Mickey Norris from the Cannabis Consumers Campaign down in California.
Portland Hemp Stock. My name is Anna Diaz, and I am the one of the founders of Oregon Normal and on the board of directors. And I've been an activist for a long time before I became a cannabis activist. And here on this panel, I am honored to be seated with Alan, executive director of the National Normal here all the way in Washington, D.C. It just gives me chills to even, I can't even tell you how exciting that is for me. And I don't mean to embarrass you, but it is. Anyway, and next to him is Mickey Norris, another one of my heroes from Northern California, who puts out the West Coast leaf that you all enjoy at the THCF clinic and all over town, who has been an activist also for many, many years and an inspiration of mine. And last but not least, the infamous Wes Belville, who used to be on the board of Oregon Normal, but has now moved on to become the National Outreach Coordinator for National Normal. So we got some high rollers here who have been cannabis activists for a long, long time, and I'm going to give you... And you can take that however you want. So I'm going to give everybody just a chance to introduce themselves and tell you a little bit about their activism and how they got where they are now and what they see for our future. You guys got 5 minutes to cram that all in, and we'll start right here with Alan.
Thank you, Anna, very, very much. My activism comes out of no arrest. I never have taken a drug test in my life.
Wow.
I've never any of the real serious pains of prohibition. I simply worked in a law firm in D.C. who had as a pro bono client Normal in this Normal versus DEA lawsuit, went down and volunteered for the organization and just was blown away at how wrong the government was in its prohibition and how lacking there was of citizens involved in its reform. So in 1991, I started volunteering for Normal and was hired soon thereafter. So my job is to encourage other people to get involved with reform. While we don't get paid a lot at Normal per se, we're able to do this full time. I work 70, 80 hour work weeks most weeks. And have made a huge personal commitment to end the criminality in my life. I never thought of myself as a criminal using marijuana. I never saw my brothers and my sisters and my cousins and my friends and coworkers as such. So I'm a stakeholder. I'm 44 years old. I enjoy the responsible use of cannabis. I can't believe what the government does to prohibit marijuana. And I've been blessed by meeting thousands and thousands of volunteers and activists who have advanced the laws as far as they have. There's a reason why we are enjoying this day of freedom here. There's a reason why a few hundred thousand people pile into the Seattle Hemp Fest every year. There's a reason why one out of three Americans live where marijuana is decriminalized. And there's a reason why one out of five Americans live in a state where it's been medicalized.
How did I get into that? I'll tell you, I never thought I'd end up being a cannabis activist in my life. You know, starting out as a teenager, I was afraid of marijuana, you know, as everybody else. I was like Bill Clinton. First time I smoked it, I didn't inhale. Somebody passed it to me, I passed it. I took a hit, didn't inhale, and passed it on. And I thought I would lose my mind or something like that. But ultimately, I'd become completely consumed by my activism in for cannabis, freedom and liberation and social justice. I came into this probably through my husband, Chris Conrad, who devised a five-point plan back in 1989 to get it legalized for industrial purposes, for personal use, and for medical marijuana. And we went around the country and met with activists all over the place, talked it up, and he did a lot of research into the subject. So I learned all about the history of cannabis and prohibition and what it can do and all its uses and this mess. But actually in 1995, I got my own voice, and I came to my own voice in this issue when somebody handed me a photo of this young woman named Jody Israel, who was in the book Shattered Life, featured in the book Shattered Lives, but this woman with her three children, and it came with a fax from her mother that said, can you help us? They're making orphans of my grandchildren. They cry and miss their parents who they love and were good to them. And their parents were people from, I believe they're from Montana, and the mother was just recently sentenced to 11 years in prison, and the father was sentenced to 29 years, first-time marijuana offenders. And I thought, this is wrong that our government is orphaning children, that they should not be doing that, that we cannot be part of this. Now, I came from a Jewish upbringing where we learned all about the Holocaust and what they were doing to people and rounding up people and putting them in camps, and it struck me the similarities of what they were doing with drug offenders, nonviolent drug offenders. They're using them as scapegoats, blaming them for all society's ills. They were rounding them up, and our prisons were getting filled with nonviolent drug offenders, and there was too many. And I thought, wow, you know, too many similarities to pre-Nazi Germany here. And I thought, you have to speak out when you see that kind of injustice.
As the day wound down on the first day of Portland Hempstock, I managed to catch my breath backstage and file a little bit of a summary report on the day's activities.
Radical Rep here at the closing moment of Portland Hempstock. John Trudell's band is up playing. It is nightfall. It's later than 9 o'clock, and it's dark. But people, there's a big crowd out in front of the stage just really enjoying the show. People are starting to file out. One of the interesting things with the Hempstock this year is at the Kelly Point Park, there's this big open clearing where the main stage is and all the vendors, of course. It's huge. It's beautiful. You've got the Willamette River on one side, the Columbia River on the other side. But to get to this clearing is a hike. I mean, it's a long pathway through woods and, you know, it doesn't look like it's any sort of developed area, a very natural-looking area. So all these people now are trying to file out, the people that are trying to leave, they're trying to file out here down this dark pathway through this dark woods. It's quite interesting. Hempstock Day 1 has had its share of ups and downs. You know, coming to a new venue like this, sometimes you don't know exactly what you're in for. So setups were delayed. There was some problems with getting power in different booths. But as far as the turnout, lots of people have turned out. I'm not really good at estimating crowds. I couldn't say how many, but definitely thousands of people have turned out here. The bands were fantastic. I'm really proud to say my brother Josh Felbell played here at the Hempstock main stage and did a fantastic set. Everybody loved it. Had a lot of people grooving to his original music. Of course, the downside is, a very big downside, is the arrival of the ambulance here, as Jack Herer, the Emperor of Hemp, collapsed backstage at the main stage in Hempstock. And he's now in the hospital here in Portland in critical condition. His son is with him. But it's just terrible news here out of Hempstock. When he left in the ambulance, he was hanging on by a thread, and he's not stable now. So all of our wishes go out for the best for Jack Herer. So many people have been able to look up to him. I'm currently camped out at the Oregon Normal Tent, just hanging out with Anna Diaz, Cannabis Carrie from the show. Normal Show Live was an encounter as well. Trying to get cell signal out here for our connection was arduous at best. So the show disconnected a couple times, left some dead air. And a half hour to go in the show, the power in the generator ran out because they ran out of gas. So, so we made best show we could. Made do with what we had, and I guess it's posted up now at live.normal.org. I'll have to get a listen to it when I get home. That's all from Portland Hempstock Day 1. We'll have plenty more twit pics and cinch updates and some Twitter updates from Hempstock. I'm Radical Russ. Until next time, take care of each other, tokers.
But just when I thought the day was over for Portland Hempstock, something truly amazing happened. Around 10 o'clock, the main generator went out during the set of John Trudell and Bad Dog. That forced them to have to end their performance, and Kelly Point Park was plunged into darkness and silence. But not for long. Members of local Native American tribes gathered around a drum on stage and began chanting in a traditional manner, singing ancient songs from their forefathers. It was truly entrancing, and many people gathered close to the stage and enjoyed this piece of American culture. While they were drumming, many of Portland's local fire dancers began performing, spinning around flaming globes of fire in an entrancing pattern in the night sky. Here's some of the audio from the drummers. Day 2 of Portland Hempstock, I took it relatively easy and didn't file a lot of reports, but there was one group I just had to get a recording of. Folk Uke is a two-piece acoustical band that consists of Amy Nelson and Kathy Guthrie, who just happen to be the daughters of Willie Nelson and Arlo Guthrie. They're such sweet-looking women, playing a ukulele and a guitar, and you'd never expect a song to come out of them that would sound like this.
I'm feeling like a dream.
That's my backstage look at this year's Portland Hempstock, next weekend Boston Freedom Rally, and I'll bring you plenty more audio from there.
Thank you for downloading the Normal Daily Audio Stash, the growing truth about cannabis. We are produced by the National Organization for the Reform of Marijuana Laws in Washington, D.C. Our executive producer is Alan St. Pierre. Our deputy director is Paul Armentano. Our webmaster is Brian Judy. And web production is provided by Red Aphid Interactive Media. As always, you can catch up on the latest information about marijuana at www.norml.org. And you can interact and download from our Audio Stash blog at stash.normal.org. For everyone here at Normal, I'm your host, Radical Russ Belville, hoping all your harvests are bountiful and your encounters with law enforcement are non-existent.
We leave you today with my personal thoughts about the heart attack suffered by one of my idols, Jack Herer. His book, The Emperor Wears No Clothes, was one of the first things I ever read with regard to marijuana law reform and the logic and the means by which it was researched and laid out. Are a large part of what led me to want to join this fight to end adult marijuana prohibition. I'm reminded that we as activists sometimes get very dedicated to our cause, sometimes to the point of neglecting ourselves. I know I've been guilty of that a few times. So I want to remind everyone out there that as you engage in this fight to end the war on certain American citizens using non-pharmaceutical, non-alcoholic, tobacco-free drugs, to take care of yourself, tokers. I say that at the end of every show, but I really mean it. Make sure that you're exercising and trying to remain healthy, because we've got a long, hard fight in front of us. I'll do it myself. I promise to exercise more and eat less and treat myself a little bit better. And until next time, take care of each other, tokers.